Today is Thursday, May 19th, 2016. We're going to read Moshe Soloveitchik Shir on Parshas Emor and Lag BaOmer.
I'd like to thank everybody for coming. In case you don't know, we're Fleishik tonight. After the class, I'd appreciate if you just clean off the tablecloths, the tables, and leave the tablecloths on the tables. If you could be so kind as to lower your cell phones. I know it's silence them, but I know that that when we're done with the class, sometimes we don't remember to, put the ringers on. I know it happens to me.
You too.
I forget to put the ringer on. And people call me and I don't answer the calls.
I'll remind you. Okay.
Memory is the second thing that goes. Anyway,
it's an old routine.
The class is being sponsored tonight, and I'm going to let Rav Moshe talk about one of the reasons why. But there's a couple of reasons why I'm sponsoring it, and that is because I have a very, very good friend. His name is Ken. And Ken today is turning 70 years old today. Now, let me just tell you, he is the youngest 70-year-old person ever in the history of 70-year-olds. And like I told him late, you know, earlier today, he doesn't look a day over 69. But no, Mazel Tov, you really and you go on and be healthy and happy. Right. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And by the way, I understand that your wife is going to be turning 39. And talking about younger women, my very close sister, Iris Fagan, is going to have a birthday tomorrow that she didn't want anybody to know. But I wanted to sing happy birthday to her with everybody here, but they already sang happy birthday. So I'm going to bypass that. And I'm going to quit my day job, if you know what I mean.
Thanks for reminding me.
Make sure you get her a real nice present. Once again, thank you very much for coming. We'll be davening 3 minutes after the class. And I want to take the time to wish everybody a very nice Erev Shabbos and a wonderful Shabbos. By the way, we could sponsor this dinner because my wife and I are very happy. My son, Brad, and his new wife, Janie, his lovely wife, is coming in tonight to spend Shabbos with us, with all the kids. Thank you. So anyway, Rav Moshe. Oh, before I forget, I want to thank the those that donated today and every week. Some of the items that we use, it was very, very nice of them. Wasn't necessary, but it's very much appreciated. And also, I'd like to thank those that helped to set up the class and this wonderful synagogue and wonderful rabbi who has been very generous with us, and we very much appreciate the generosity and the help that we get from certain individuals, which we will remain, their names will remain secret. So anyway, Rav Moshe.
Okay, also in addition to Jerry's sponsorship, it's also sponsored by the Goldenbergs. You spelled your name wrong. Yeah. Okay. In honor of the birth of their new baby granddaughter. Now, correct me if I get this name wrong. Esme? Okay. Talin. Now, if you want to know what Esme means, I was told what it means. Talin, I don't know what it means. Okay. But it doesn't mean anything. Okay. Esme means beloved and distinguished. Or beloved or distinguished. Or
French. Talin is the capital of Estonia.
Oh. Talin is the capital of Estonia, Rabbi Berger tells me. So, and all I need to know is where Estonia is. Anyway.
It's somewhere sandwiched in, so to speak.
Yeah? Okay. So, and I'm sure that she is a beautiful girl. Okay.
Mazel tov. Mazel tov.
Okay. Okay. I was originally going to speak about Parshas Amor, and however, there was sort of like a request that I speak about Lag BaOmer. I guess Lag BaOmer excites people. So, okay. That's only lately. When I was a kid, they didn't do that. Okay, so we used to go shoot bows and arrows. Anyway, but the... anyway, so first we'll start off with the question is, what does Lag BaOmer commemorate? There are a number of different opinions. And these opinions create problems. The Chassam Sofer says, and I'm sure this is an opinion that most people are not aware of, but the Chassam Sofer's opinion is that Lag BaOmer commemorates the mun coming down. The mun, you know, the bread that came down from heaven in the desert, the mun, whatever.
Man.
Yeah. So the, because he figured it out, they prepared food for 30 days, whatever it was, and he figured out, and then they complained for a couple of days, and so the mun came down in Lag BaOmer. So according to the Chassam Sofer, the only problem I have with the thing the Chassam Sofer says, a lot of questions would be answered with it, is that no one knew about it. The question is, why didn't anybody know that that's why we're celebrating Lag BaOmer? But that's what the Chassam Sofer says, and it's something that's very, very interesting. Then, the opinion of the opinion of the Mekubalim is that it commemorates the death of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. That was his yard site. Now, and because of that, in Meron they have all kinds of dancing and making bonfires and what not. Up sharing. And now, there actually was, today no one cares, but at one time there was a big dispute about this. First of all, at least in the old days, I don't know if they do it today, they used to take clothes and burn the clothes in the fire. Because the law is that the clothes of a king are burnt upon his death. So they identify Reb Shimon Bar Yochai somehow as representing Malchus, really a person has to wonder, what is the connection between Reb Shimon Bar Yochai and Malchus? What is the connection? I don't know that he was a descendant of David HaMelech, or I never heard that he was a descendant of David HaMelech and Shlomo. I never heard that he was the Reish Galusa, ultimately the one that were after the time of the Churban. I thought I shut this off. Okay. After the time of the Churban, the one who represented the king was the Reish Galusa. He was the head of the Jews in Babel, in Babylonia. I just found out actually a week ago or 2 weeks ago that I am a descendant of Bustanoi. Bustanoi was the Reish Galusa. Somebody figured out Bustanoi's wife was a princess who went through Geras, and Donald Trump is a descendant of one of her siblings. So somebody sent me a letter telling me that I am a 47th cousin, one place removed, of Donald Trump. I don't know. Anyway, so I guess I have to vote for Sarkal to Salim. Anyway, anybody that's a descendant of the Netziv is some kind of cousin of Donald Trump, according to this paper, whether the paper is true or not. And then I'm related to a whole bunch of emperors and a whole bunch of nations, Constantine, and so, yeah. Anyway, don't worry. Anyway, but in any case, the question is, and this question just came to my mind now, and the answer just came to my mind now. Why is Reb Shimon Bar Yochai so many of the Golan Chasam Sofer was very much opposed? And it could be that's why he offered this other explanation, because it bothered him. They used to take expensive clothes, and you have to realize that the Jews in Eretz Yisrael at that time were impoverished. And not only that, there was the Chasam Sofer and Reb Chaim Volozhiner. At that time, Reb Chaim Volozhiner was my great 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 grandfather. Anyway, he wasn't related to Donald Trump. Anyway, they were the ones who assumed the responsibility to raise money for the people living in Eretz Yisrael in the early 1800s. In the 1800s, it was them who they assumed the responsibility. I could see where they would have gotten upset with people taking expensive clothes and just throwing it into a fire. And the Shoal Ameshiv, that's later, the Shoal Ameshiv is very, very troubled. Why do they make such a simcha out of it? Why do they make such a simcha out of it? He says, when someone like Reb Shimon Bar Yochai dies, on the contrary, it's a time for fasting, not a time for frivolity. He felt it was frivolity, but okay, let's give the benefit of that for simcha. So the Shoal Ameshiv wrote very strongly, and he says, I think you would do more. Reb Shimon Bar Yochai would have more nachas ruach, if I could use that word, would have more nachas ruach if the money that is spent on these clothes that's thrown into the fire would be spent to take care of poor people living in Eretz Yisrael. This was what the Shoal Ameshiv wrote. And then, I want to understand the custom. But today, I want to understand the custom that they identified him with the concept of Malchus. What is the significance of that? And then, there are those who say that on Lag BaOmer, the students of Rabbi Akiva, that seems to be the shita of of some of the Ramah, I think, that Lag BaOmer is when the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. It seems that they did die on Lag BaOmer also, but they stopped dying. Now, I have a big problem with that idea, that that's the reason we celebrate Lag BaOmer, because all of the students of Rabbi Akiva died. So what are we celebrating? That if some of them had survived, and they stopped dying and some survived, it's okay. But here, 24,000 died. It stopped because they all died. Later on, he got new Talmidim. So what's the purpose of the celebration that the only reason they stopped dying is because they were all dead already? You can't die more than once. So, huh? I'm getting there. But not so much Nitzachon. It is also suggested, and it's also suggested that the reason for it is because, according to the information given over by Josephus, so, and it's in religious sources that the revolt began on Lag BaOmer with Bar Kochva's. Revolt began on Lag BaOmer. I have a problem with that also. If Bar Kochva had won, and Israel would have been freed of the yoke of Rome, I would understand why we celebrate. But he lost. And not only he lost, Jews were killed throughout the Roman Empire as
Beitar.
A result of it.
Huh? Beitar.
But not just in Eretz Israel. In Italy and all these places, Jews were killed all over as a result after the defeat of Bar Kochva. So all of the reasons are somewhat troubling. Now, but when we talk about Lag BaOmer, we should also discuss why we observe. I'll answer some of the questions, but just peripherally, and then we'll go into it more. Originally, the Gemara says, why did the students of Bar Kochva that died? There are two texts. One text is that they died from Pesach till Shavuos, and the other text is that they died from Pesach till 15 days before Shavuos.
Akiva students.
Huh?
Akiva students.
Rabbi Akiva students. Yeah. So the apros hachag is the expression. Some say pros means part. When you take the matzah, you break it in half. One is called the prusa. So pros hachag is understood to mean a half a month. Half a month is 15 days. So that which comes out Lamed Dalet BaOmer, by the way, not Lamed Gimel, but whatever. But it's the students of Rabbi Akiva died. So the Gemara says, why did they die? They died from Askara. What is Askara? Askara, I checked with my cardiologist, who's a good friend of mine. We learned together. Dr. Kenningsberg, and he told me Askara, on the basis of the way the Gemara describes, is diphtheria. Diphtheria, yeah. Yeah. So that's I know Sansino explains it differently, but this is the way he explained it to me. So they died. And why did they die from Askara? They died from Askara because Shalom Nagu Kavod Zebezeh, because they didn't treat each other with honor. All right. However, in the Geras de Rav Shrira Goen, something else is brought. What the Geras de Rav Shrira Goen does with the Gemara, I don't know. But the Geras of Rav Shrira Goen says that the students of Rabbi Akiva died bishmada. Bishmada, that's the expression. Shmada. Now, Haman, he lahashmid laharoglabed. He wanted to kill. So they were killed. They were killed.
Exterminate.
You wouldn't use shmada for Askara, you know, that wouldn't. So again, if he had a different gears in the Gemara or not, I don't know. But that's what the Igeris Rav Shrira Goen says, that he died. They died bishmada. There are those now. It's well known that Rabbi Akiva was one of those who supported, and the Rambam emphasizes that point, who supported Bar Kokhba's revolt. There were many who didn't support Bar Kokhba's revolt, but there were those who supported Bar Kokhba's revolt. And there are those who suggest, and the Gemara says that the Rambam says that Rabbi Akiva was no say Caleb Shal Bar Kokhba. He carried the, I know, so Caleb, I assume, is the weapons of Bar Kokhba. In other words, you had to realize that Akiva was a pretty old man at that time. It was not something, I think, that would have been a practical thing. It was probably just as a sign of support. But he was, the Rambam says, he was no seik in Hilchos Malachim. He was no seik Kalev Shal Bar Kokhba. So there are those who suggest that Rabbi Akiva, who was the major supporter of Bar Kokhba, that some of his students were, or 24,000, whatever, they were in the war, and that they were involved, whatever it was, and the Romans killed them, whether it was as a result of the war or because of Rabbi Akiva's support of Bar Kokhba. But the expression is bishmada in the Igeris Rav Shrira Goen. All right, now we have to understand. And the Romans initially did not really wage war against the Chachamim. When they first took over, the war individual Chachamim. But initially, when they took over Yerushalayim, when they destroyed Yerushalayim, actually they saw the Chachamim, you know, there was a request, Hainli Yavne v'Chachameha. They set aside a place for the Chachamim, those that they didn't consider a threat, to learn Torah. But over the years, the Chachamim, and we say Kinnis, we mention it, Dasara Haruge Malchus, the ten Chachamim that were killed now you see, initially the one that they were most upset about was the Kohanim. Of course, the people they were most upset with, those that led the revolt against Rome, and they took them to Rome and killed them on the steps of some of the government buildings there. But besides them, the ones that the Romans, so to say, considered their major threat were the Kohanim. My uncle would always say, Tisha B'Av, he says, you look at where the city wall was in terms of the second Beis HaMikdash. It wasn't that big of a city, Yerushalayim. And they got into Yerushalayim on the 17th of Tammuz. So till they got to the Beis HaMikdash, which was they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av, but they got into the Beis HaMikdash a couple days before Tisha B'Av, whatever it was. So he says, can you imagine? Rome was the major army of the world at that time. And they had to fight over every inch of territory till they got to the Beis HaMikdash, because it wasn't a large distance. It wasn't a large distance, and they had to fight over every inch of territory. And my uncle says that the ones who did most of the fighting to prevent not so much from the perspective of the revolt, but from the perspective of saving the Beis HaMikdash, I assume my uncle didn't get into that, but because they knew that once the Romans get in, something is going to happen to the Beis HaMikdash. So the ones who fought the hardest and each inch of territory were the Kohanim. So because of that, Rome wiped out all the cities of the Kohanim. The Kohanim were, but the Chachamim, they considered them clergymen. They didn't consider them to be scholars, clergymen. They didn't see them as a threat. But eventually, Rome saw them as a threat. And then they focused on eradicate the Chachamim. You have the Asara Haruge Malchus, according to the Geresh Rav Shirigon. You have the students of Rabbi Akiva. What happened at that time? Now, in discussing the Kinnis, my uncle says that Rome thought, because they were concerned about those that were becoming the leaders of, that were the leaders of the Jewish people. They saw them as their competition, as their threat. The rabbis were the teachers. They weren't the leaders. So they didn't see them as a threat. But what happened? As a result of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, as a result of the killing out of the leaders of the Jewish army, whatever it was, ultimately, the ones that became the leaders of the Jewish people were the rabbis. And truth of the matter is, throughout most of the exile, who were the leaders of the Jewish people? It was the rabbis in the towns in Europe. It probably began to change about 200 years ago. I think the World War I more or less completed that process. But throughout the exile, there was no other leaders for the most part. It was the rabbis that were the leaders. And I think that that's perhaps the reason they identify Reb Shimon Bar Yochai with Malchus. In other words, Rome thought that, and we know that the Rome tried, the Gemara mentions, they tried to kill. That's why Reb Shimon Bar Yochai had to hide in a cave. They thought that they destroyed Jewish leadership. But the truth is, the Chachamim became the leaders of the Jewish people. And that could be the reason why Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was identified with Malchus. And that could be the reason that this custom developed when they identified Lag BaOmer as the day of his death. So in other words, Rome, the idea was, Rome was not able to eradicate, with all the Jews that they killed, with all the Chachamim that they killed, they were not able to stop the Jewish people from having leadership. And the leadership was the Chachma Yisrael. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, as perhaps the outstanding one among the Chachma Yisrael, certainly one of the outstanding ones among the Chachma Yisrael, and the one who was most anti-Rome at that time. So he was the one. So when he died, and he lived his whole normal life, he wasn't killed. Rabbi Akiva was killed. He was one of the next generation of Rabbi Akiva's students who were not killed. Him, Rabbi Meir. So they represented the continuation of learning of Torah, but more than that, they represented, I shouldn't say more than that, but together with that, they represented the continuation of Jewish leadership. Rome was not able to destroy Jewish leadership. There was a merger between being the leaders of Torah and being the leaders of the Jewish people. So that could be the idea behind it. In the sense, it represents the defeat of Rome. Sometimes you can win the war on the battlefield, but you lose it in history. And Rome won the war on the battlefield, but they lost it in history. So that could be the reason why. And in a certain sense, Bar Kochva, while militarily he was defeated, but in terms of the goals of Rome, Rome failed. So the revolt, to a certain degree, and it could be, you know, when you think, when you have a servile perspective, and this is important for us even today, when we have a servile perspective, so then there's no hope. You know, the one of the Kal Vachomers in the Torah. Parshas Vayera. Hein b'nei Yisrael v'lo shamu el Moshe. The Jewish people did not listen to Moshe. Mikotzer ruach me'avodah kasha, because of their shortness of breath and the hard work that they had. When Moshe first came to the Jewish people and told the Jewish people that God wants to redeem them, and then Paro made things more difficult for them, so the people stopped listening to Moshe. So when God told Moshe to go to Paro, so he says, "Hein b'nei Yisrael lo shamu elai." The Jewish people didn't listen to me. Ve'ech yishmeini Paro. How can I expect Paro to listen to me? Ba'ani aral sfasayim. I have trouble speaking also. But the Jewish people didn't listen, and the Medrash says this is one of the Kal Vachomers. Now, do you take a? Sometimes from one thing we can understand a greater thing. Here, the Jewish people didn't listen. Certainly, Paro didn't listen. But how can that be? Jewish people didn't listen because they found themselves in these circumstances. But what's the answer? The answer is, what does mikotzer ruach me'avodah kasha mean? It means that the Jewish people could not at that point perceive themselves as being free. They saw themselves as slaves. Now, if the enslaved cannot perceive themselves as being free, the enslaver certainly can't see them being free. That's the Kal Vachomer. So my sense is that at a certain point there was probably large groups in Rome and among the Jewish people who said, we just have to accept our lot. There's no hope. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. And that's what Rabbi Akiva, together with Bar Kokhba, they accomplished. They might have lost the war on the battlefield, but they accomplished this idea that the Jewish people no longer saw, they might have been murdered, they might have been killed, but they didn't have the self-perception of being slaves. They might have in fact been slaves, but they didn't have that self-perception. Hein b'nei Yisrael. So that is what was accomplished through the revolt of Bar Kokhba and through Rabbi Akiva, and it represented also the continuation. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he was a student of Rabbi Akiva. Where did he get this ability to, on one hand, to rebel, to be against Rome, and on the other hand, he assumed positions of leadership. It was a different type of leadership that he got from Rabbi Akiva. That was inspired by Rabbi Akiva. So this is the reason. Now, I have a certain problem with all these reasons, with the exception of the Chassam Sofer's reason. And the problem I have is that the Gemara says in two places, Megillas Tainus is brought up. Megillas Tainus sees things. What is Megillas Tainus? During the time of the Second Commonwealth, the second base of Mikdash, there were a lot of miraculous events. Jews were saved many times. And on each time, they would proclaim a holiday. And the Gemara says, but then when the Churban took place, after the destruction of the base of Mikdash, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so all these holidays, the Chachamim got rid of all these holidays. They felt that these holidays lost their validity, their message, whatever it was, lost their meaning. So they got rid of all these holidays except for Hanukkah and Purim, and the Gemara discusses why Hanukkah and Purim were different. And then the Gemara mentions that they made a holiday about something else, and the Gemara says, if all the holidays came bottle, if they revoked or nullified all the holidays that existed beforehand, we have to assume that they wouldn't make another holiday. So, in other words, you're not allowed to make new holidays because of the Churban. So the question is, and I Libi Omerli, my sense tells me that the reason the Chassam Sofer says that Lag BaOmer is a holiday commemorating the Mun coming down from heaven is because he was troubled by this question. All the holidays that are associated with the second base of Mikdash and after the second base of Mikdash, you're not allowed to have. What happened in the desert? That's a different story. The Churban, it has nothing to do. It didn't take away from the meaning of the Mun. So, but the question is, how could we have a holiday like Lag BaOmer? How can we have a holiday like Lag BaOmer? And matter of fact, there is a machlokus between the Prichadash and the Maramolashker. In the old days, each town had its own miracle. Well, if you have your own pogrom, you have your own miracles also when you survive the pogroms. So each town had their own Purim. They had the different Purim. Matter of fact, I remember in Ephrat, a certain Arab terrorist walked in with a bomb into the medical building. And he was someone that was always there, you know. He worked there and everything. Somehow they suspected that there's something strange and they shot him. And then they found out he had a bomb on him. And because of that, that day is their private Purim. That's their private Purim. But there is a dispute between the Prichadash and the Maramolashka. The Prichadash says you're not allowed to have a private Purim because Batla Megillas Kindness, you're not allowed to make new holidays. And the Maramolashka says that you could. The question is why. Okay. So the question is, how could we celebrate Lag BaOmer for all these reasons? So you could say, if you see the reasons, because it represents a negation of Rome, you could suggest that the reason why these holidays lost their relevancy is because of what the Romans did, because of the defeat of the Jewish people by Rome. But here, where in a sense these holidays commemorate the negation of Rome's impact on the Jewish people, that might be different. That's one approach you could take. I think there's another approach also that could be taken. It's very interesting, if you take a look at the Rambam, doesn't mention anything about the holidays. He doesn't mention the holidays. Well, we understand why he doesn't mention the holidays, because they all were taken away. They lost the validity. The Chachamim said that these holidays don't have to be observed anymore. But he should mention that you can't make new holidays. That's a halacha. I think the Rambam understood the Gemara differently. I think the Rambam understood the Gemara was, there is no halacha that you can't make new holidays. I think the Rambam is saying a very psychological thing. If the Chachamim said, all the old holidays are off, they wouldn't, in other words, why? Because they were overcome by depression. They were overcome by depression because of the Churban. So if the Chachamim said that Rabbi Akiva was an exception to the rule. You see, all the Chachamim, they tore their clothes and they cried. Rabbi Akiva, when he saw the Churban, also tore his clothes. But Rabbi Akiva mitzachek. All the Chachamim were crying and Rabbi Akiva was happy. And he said that he experiences the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash when he looks at the Makom of the Churban. But most of the Jews were in a state of depression at that time. They were in a state of depression because of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. They were in a state of depression because of what Rome was doing to the Jewish people. So they're not saying that there is an Easter to make new holidays. They're just saying, logic dictates they would never have made new holidays. If because they recognized that the depression that overcame the Jewish people, they had to get rid of all the holidays, they certainly would not have made new holidays. But ultimately, when the Jewish people ceased to see themselves as slaves of Rome, in spite of the pogroms that Rome was doing. So in a certain sense, that depression, as years passed by, we don't find any mention about Lag BaOmer as a holiday in the Gemara per se. But in Sifrei Kabbalah you find it, but in terms of the Gemara, where does it pick up? It picks up. The Miri mentions that the Gaonim were the, uh, In other words, you find it mentioned only later on. In other words, when that depression, in a sense, lessened. So and the reason it lessened is because of what Rabbi Akiva, because of Bar Kokhba, and because of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. When that depression lessened, so the Chachamim felt that the Chachamim of that generation felt that now we can create holidays because we received from them, from Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Bar Kokhba, this idea that we're no longer slaves of Rome. And when we're no longer slaves of Rome, so when we look at all the destruction, as Rabbi Akiva said, I become more convinced. Biyadua, till Rabbi Akiva said that when he saw the fulfillment, he didn't know whether the Beis Hamikdash is going to be rebuilt. It seems that the Gemara at the end of Makkos. How can we say such a thing about Rabbi Akiva? That he didn't know. But now that he saw the fulfillment of one prophecy, the prophecy of destruction, so he's sure about the fulfillment of the second prophecy, the prophecy of the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash. Rabbi Akiva had some doubts? What the Navi said. How can we assume such a possibility? But he says, Biyadua, there's a difference between Amunah and Yediyah. Amunah means I believe. Ani ma'amin. The Rambam says, Yisod ha-yisodos v'amud ha-chochmos leida, the foundation of all foundations and the pillar of all wisdom is to know of God's existence. What's the difference between Amunah, knowledge, and belief? Belief is I believe. My parents told me, my grandparents told me, my Rebbe told me. Knowledge is more than belief. Knowledge is more than belief. Rabbi Akiva always believed in the coming of Mashiach. But after he saw the fulfillment of the destruction, he saw the Beis Hamikdash destroyed. Remember, this is the Rabbi Akiva, the eternal optimist, Biyadua. Now it's not just a matter of belief anymore. Now it's knowledge. Now I see the Jewish people surviving. I see their land destroyed. I see their Beis Hamikdash destroyed. This is what Rome thought. Rome thought that they'll destroy the land, they'll destroy the Beis Hamikdash, they'll destroy the Jewish people. There won't be any leaders anymore. But Rome was not able to accomplish that. So then the Chachamim became the leaders. And then they tried to kill the Chachamim. But Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was one of the Chachamim who survived Rome. So that's the idea of Biyadua. When we see all of this, it's not only a matter of belief, it's a matter of experience.
Thanks for coming. Also good while you have.
Thank you. Got
rid of Rome.
I'd like to mention that we're going to be davening in just a couple of minutes. I'd like to wish everybody a good year of Shabbos and good Shabbos.
Yeah. And a good Shabbos to you.
Kenny. Happy birthday, Iris. And you know, from nice things. To you and your family.
Thank you.
On the birth of your new grandfather.
Thank you. Thank you.